listeners.
Hey, everyone.
It's another episode of the Borgen Brothers Podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And today we have another regularly scheduled episode where we are here with you all to discuss a board game.
Yes, it is our first episode of 2022.
Absolutely.
You know, first episode of the new year, got a ton of new games recently due to it being the holiday season. And so we have quite a few good games to cover in the next few episodes.
That's right. This game that we're talking about today is one that I received. It's one that I've kind of been wanting to play for a while now. I've been aware of it for about a year, maybe a little longer. So we finally got a copy. We played it. Had a good time. So without any further ado, Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about Pictures, designed by Christian Storr and Daniela Storr, and published by P.D. Verlag in 2019, and it won the Spiel des Jahres in 2020.
All right. Spiel des Jahres winner, Pictures. So for a short description about what Pictures is about, in Pictures, players attempt to depict a secret picture using one of five sets of objects. After each player has made their depictions, you must guess which image each player has attempted to recreate. You score a point for every correct guess, plus a point for each opponent that guessed your image correctly. After five rounds, with every player getting a chance to use each set of objects, the player with the most points wins. So that's a short description. It's just important to note that there are five different sets of objects, and you get a turn with each of them to depict an image chosen secretly at random. So we're going to go over a little more detail about how to play this game. We're going to go into the strategy involved, which there's not much because this is a pretty simple, pretty light, abstract game. And then we'll go into the design of the game later on. So we'll start off by going over how it's played. And there's really only, I think, two things that we need to clarify from this short description.
Yeah.
Because this game is very simple, very straightforward, and we like to say that. And there's really only two things to point out about this game, and that's just, we'll call it three. So the first thing is that for the setup of the game, there is a deck of cards, like tons and tons of cards that have pictures on either side. You shuffle this deck up, and you place 16 of those cards in a 4x4 grid. And the game gives you these tokens that you use to label the rows and columns with A through D and 1 through 4. So that's the important part of setup. There's also a bag of cardboard chits in it, and each of those cardboard chips has a coordinate on it. So at the beginning of every round, the way that you select your image is you draw from that bag, and you get a coordinate, and that coordinate will correspond to one picture in that 4x4 grid.
Yes, and I really want to clarify that there are more than one coordinate chip for each coordinate.
Right, so in any given round, it is possible for more than one player to have the same picture, but it is not possible for more than one player to have the same objects, because yes, there are five different sets of objects that come with the game, and those sets of objects are the shoestrings, the building blocks, the sticks and stones, the colored cubes, which I will refer to as the pixel cubes, and the last set of objects is a deck of cards with symbols on them. And so those are the five objects, and that's the other thing you need to know about how to play this game. Each player starts with one of these objects. Other than the pixel cubes, all of the objects come with a token to use to represent the bottom of your composition. So when you're done, you know, creating your depiction using your set of objects, you place this little token wherever the bottom is for you, so that everyone else is looking at it in the right way.
Yes.
So you get these objects, the pixel cubes. The way that those work is you put 9 of these colored cubes in a 3x3 grid. The game gives you this frame to put them in, and the frame has that bottom indicator on it, so it you can still show everyone where the bottom of your composition is. I guess it's important to note with the pixel cubes that there's only 3 cubes of every color, and those colors are white, black, brown, gray, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, and brown.
You said brown twice, and I don't think there's purple.
There's no purple. Okay, there's no purple, but there is white, black, gray, brown, red, orange, yellow, green, blue.
Yeah,
are the colors.
That sounds right.
Let's see, what else? There's 4 sticks and four stones, I think, on the Sticks and Stones. I'm not quite sure.
Say four sticks count. And five stones.
Four sticks and five stones. That sounds about right.
The shoelaces have two shoelaces.
Yeah, one short and one long.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go over all the different symbols in the deck, but there's a good variety of symbols, but there's not everything that you would want in that deck.
Yeah.
I think you'll find if you play it.
They're like pictograms, kind of like wingdings or like emojis.
Yeah.
Unicode characters.
Kind of sketches.
Yeah.
They look kind of like sketches of like really simple shapes and objects.
Some of them include a car, a campfire, a clock, for example.
Yeah, a life preserver, a clover, a skull and crossbones. Let's see. There is
the building blocks.
The building blocks, which there's like, you know, picture building blocks, like typical building blocks. And the ones that you're picturing right now are probably the ones that they have here. There's only about six of them, I think. You got to work with what you got, but there's a good variety of different shapes. There's an arch building block.
Yeah, there's an arch. There's a cylinder. Those are like the two unique ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a couple different rectangular prisms. Okay, so yeah, there's these five sets of objects. Each player gets one at the start of the game, and then you just pass them around the table as you play. You can play up to five players. So that's one player per object, and then you play for five rounds so that everybody gets a chance with each of those objects. Yes. You also, by the way, you put your token with the coordinate in it back in the bag in between rounds, so it's not like certain pictures will be eliminated from the possible pictures as you play. You're always drawing from a full bag of tokens with the coordinates on them, so the same picture can be drawn multiple times in the same round and multiple rounds throughout a game. Yes. And you win, like I said, by earning the most points, which you earn by guessing the other player's pictures correctly, and also having your own picture being guessed correctly by as many players as possible.
Yeah, everybody gets like a little score sheet at the start of the game, and every round you write down what your guess is for each player's coordinate, and then when you reveal, you get a point for each coordinate you have guessed correctly, and you get a point for each player that has guessed yours correctly. So it's pretty straightforward. Right.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of important to mention that there is that sheet, because that is how you sort of lock in your guesses for the other players. You write the other player's names at the top of the columns on the score sheet, and then in the boxes underneath their name for every round is where you put your guess for what coordinate their image is at. All right, so let's get a little bit into strategy. So with this game, there's not too much strategy because it's not a very complicated game. But I do have a couple tips for each object that we could go over.
Sure.
As well as like one or two general tips.
I do want to start with a general tip, which is that kind of like most of the limited communication board games, a big part of this game's strategy is just learning how the other players communicate. Like, this is a good game to play multiple games of in a session, I feel like. Because like, you know, you might not know what a player focuses on when they use shoelaces, but maybe by the third time they've done shoelaces, you might realize, okay, like, each time they've gotten shoelaces, they've done this with it, or they've mimicked this part of the image. Different people focus on different parts of each image, and so it's helpful to sort of iterate on that and come to understand your other players.
Yeah, I wanted to point out, sort of like you are, that there is a distinction between players who will attempt to recreate the entire image with their, you know, odd object set on any given round, or players who will only try to depict a small part of that image, or one portion, maybe just the most prominent portion. Like, for example, you could try to depict an entire seascape in the image that you're attempting to depict with, you know, whatever objects you have. Or there might be a lighthouse in that picture, so maybe you only depict the lighthouse.
Yeah. Looking on the front of the box, there's like a picture with an umbrella of different colors. You could say if you had the pixel cubes, you could only put the colors of the umbrella, or you could put the colors of the umbrella as one cube each, and then like a bunch of white and gray around it for the snow. You have a lot of freedom with some of the pictures.
Even especially with the pixel cubes, it can be difficult to depict an entire image because you only have three of every color. So like if you're dealing with like a picture with a lot of green in it, because there's like a forest and grass and stuff, you only have three cubes, and so you got to come up with six other cubes to fit into this composition. So in those cases, you start to sort of zoom in on something else that you can depict with the cubes that you have. A part of this game, part of the strategy is figuring out which players gravitate towards that, as opposed to just trying to go for the whole image. And then understanding like how they do that too, because, you know, maybe they're focusing mostly on the materials that make up the image, like if it's made of wood, right, or if it's made of, plant matter, or if it's made of stone. Or they might be more concerned with like the gestural aspects or like the geometric aspects of the picture. Like, for example, in one of the games we played, you depicted a cloud of smoke as like a wedge in your depiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then that cloud of smoke was being reflected in some water. So you had this sort of like angled wedge going above and below a horizon line. And if you didn't realize that the smoke was billowing out in that shape and it was being reflected, then it was difficult to guess what you were trying to depict. But once you figured it out, like, oh, that's, you're depicting the smoke and you're depicting it in this way. You know, yeah. It could have been like with the strings, like one person might just do the outline of the smoke. Another person might jumble up the string to make it look kind of like billowy, wispy smoke, you know?
Right. Like if you were to sketch it. Yeah. I think the other thing, though, is that it might be a good idea to iterate off of what people have done for existing pictures. This yes. is most obvious if you get an exact match for a component in picture. Like if somebody did blocks with A3, and then when you got blocks, you also got A3, you can just repeat it. Mm-hmm. But also, even then, like if people are focusing on a foreground object in a given picture, you can always build your future versions of that off the foreground object in particular, because that's where right. people are already looking.
Like if there's a big red, like a padlock in the middle of a picture, and when somebody was using the string, they only depicted the padlock. Then when it comes to you, if you're dealing with the blocks or maybe the pixels, then you can also do the same thing. Just focus on depicting that padlock and everyone else will get it too.
Right.
There was one game we played, though, where the sticks and stones continued to draw the same image. It happened 4 times in that game.
Yeah, and I was the one who didn't get it.
Yeah. So everyone was just doing the same thing. Even if it comes to you, even if like the first time it happened, people didn't get it. But then, you know, after everyone revealed their answers and which pictures they were trying to depict, you know, the person who did it explained their reasoning. Then when it comes to you, it you won't fail if you do the same thing. Like everyone will get it now, mm-hmm. now that it's been explained to them. So even if it doesn't work the first time, it'll probably definitely work the second time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah, that was my other, macro strategy point, was just to like try to pay attention to what other people are doing with their depictions. And when you get the same images, possibly even with the same objects, do the same thing.
Right.
If you're going for points, if you're just trying to, you know, go for creativity and be flashy or be unique, then do your own thing. Okay. A couple tips with each of the sets of objects that I have written down. So I'll go in just one by one. Sticks and stones. And this is just what I tend to do, and I think it could be helpful. With sticks and stones, try to pay attention to the horizontal and vertical lines in your picture that you're trying to depict. Or I guess just any of the lines, the straight lines you're trying to depict, and use the sticks to depict those. And then you can use the stones to depict anything that's rounder or misshapen. Or you can use the stones to differentiate the sticks from something that's made out of a different material in this image. Because sticks and stones are made out of very different materials, so you can use them to depict two different materials in your image. So like if there's like a piece of bread sitting on a plate, then, you know, the stones can be the plate and the stick can be the bread.
Right. I think with sticks and stones, it's good to use them to represent foreground objects specifically, because you can't really do like horizons or landscapes with them the same way you can with some of the other objects.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very good for things that already stand out.
Yeah. They're also good for like, if there's any repetition in mm-hmm. the image, because the sticks are all relatively the same size. So if you need to depict something with repetition, like pillars on the front of a building. The sticks and stones are good for that. Okay, building blocks. So for the building blocks, I have two tips. The first is to use each face of the block. So, you know, there's the arch block, which when you look at from one side, it's an archway. And when you look at from another side, it's just a flat rectangle. And from another side, it's a smaller rectangle. So just consider what each face of a block looks like as you're constructing your image. And then the last thing is that you could decide to either construct like a 3D upright like diorama with the blocks for your depiction, or you can lay it all flat and sort of do just like a two-dimensional depiction using the blocks. And if you're a guesser, then try to figure out which way the clue giver is going with that, whether they're doing something they're supposed to view from the top down or from, you know, the front.
Yeah.
For the shoelaces, this is just a little technical trick. You can technically like pinch them to crease the shoelaces if you're trying to get them to hold a certain angle, like a right angle. If you're trying to do like a skyline with the shoelaces, it helps to just like kind of pinch and fold it in a couple different places to get those right angles to stay still on the table.
Yeah, shoelaces are one of my worst ones because of how bad I am at manipulating them.
I think also the shoelaces are the best when it comes to depicting a skyline or a horizon line.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
If there's a sky or a horizon, the shoelaces are the best at doing that because it's very easy to straighten out a shoelace.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for the pixel blocks, so we already mentioned that there's only three of every color. So if there's way too much green or blue, you know, if you're depicting something that has a sky and an ocean and both are blue, then you probably can't do the whole image. You'll have to focus in on one specific thing. Or you'll have to figure out, like, okay, if I can't use blue for the sky and the ocean, then I'll use blue for one of those and I'll use white for the other thing. So figuring out which one of those should be white is good.
Yeah.
Oh, I just came up with another macro strategy, but I'll get to that after I'm done with all the objects.
Yeah. With pixel cubes, I think the advice is to either zoom out or zoom in. So, like, either take the details of the picture very tiny and use, like, one cube for an object in the center, or zoom in really far so that a focal point in the picture is, like, the only thing you're depicting with cubes.
Mm-hmm. If you do the zoom out, I think you kind of mentioned a point that I would give, which is like, if there's an object that's very prominent in the middle of the drawing, or in any of the, you know, nine segments of the drawing, if there's something that really sticks out to you, then highlight that with your pixel cube, you know, rather than just kind of squinting your eyes and letting it all blur together. Like, for example, like that red padlock image, the padlock doesn't take up exactly 1/9 of the image in the center of that picture. It probably takes up much less than that. It's probably a very small padlock, but that red padlock sticks out. So making the center cube red is in your best interest.
Right. If there's any colors that don't appear on other cards, use those colors.
Mm-hmm. I was going to, that was my macro point. Oh. Let me get to the deck of symbols real quick.
Sure.
And so the deck of symbols, when you get it, you're probably going to feel like it's lacking. Like there's symbols that you kind of wish were in the deck. There's, first of all, it is a rule that you do have to place the cards upright and in a row. So you can't get creative with position of the cards. So,
and you have
sort
to
of following Mysterium rules. Huh? Yeah. And you have to use at least two cards and at most five cards.
Yeah.
So I would say follow Mysterium rules, put the most relevant card first and then go from there. So like if you're depicting something with a lot of foliage, there's that four leaf clover card. I'd put that first just to designate like, yeah, the plants are a pretty big part of this image. And then go from there. Like, if you're using a card just for its shape or just for its color or for its material, you know, maybe there's like a metal fence, so you throw out the padlock card. Maybe there's no padlock on this fence, but you're just saying, like, there's something made metal on this picture. Then you can include the padlock. But if there's something, if you think that might throw people off, then throw it, you know, as the second or third or fourth card in the sequence.
Yeah, that makes
sense. Okay, so like you were saying, the one more macro point is to make sure that you're not accidentally depicting more than one card. And there's only so much you can do, because there are a lot of like landscapes and seascapes and stuff that if you start to depict those, they might start to look like all the other ones. So you need to sort of pick apart what makes the card you're trying to depict more unique than other cards that are similar. So if you're, you know, using the pixels and you say like, okay, this and this, they both have a lot of whites and blues and greens, but this one has that one orange tree in it and that one doesn't. So I'm going to put an orange cube in there. You know, even if the orange tree is the smallest thing in the image, like that's going to help differentiate it from the other one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, keep that in mind. I actually back to the deck of symbols. It can help once you've played the game a couple times to consider when somebody else is using the deck, to consider which cards they aren't using. Like there was a round where the deck of symbols was used to describe, like they used a couple symbols and it was between a card with a surfer on it and a card what's the term for somebody who watches over a beach or a pool?
Lifeguard
post. Totally forgot the word for lifeguard. Yeah, it was like there was a picture of a surfer and a picture of a lifeguard post. And I thought it was either of them because they used like a shark card. I think it ended up being something completely different. But I knew that there was a life preserver card available to this person, but they chose not to use it in their 2-5 cards. So because they didn't, I realized like, oh, it's probably not the lifeguard tower because they aren't using the life preserver. Like that would be a slam dunk. So it's got to be a different card.
Yeah.
Or a different picture. So yeah, use that to your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about all we have for strategy.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's not a very like strategically focused game.
Sure.
It's definitely more about creativity and interpretation.
Yeah, we really don't need to tell you how to play with blocks, because I'm sure it's something that many of our listeners have been doing since they were babies. So yeah, you've already got the skills for a lot of these things. All right, so we're going to take a quick break to drop some plugs. We're going to go to the plug crate, our plug collection, plug shelves.
Not a fan of any of these. Off
the plug shelves, and then we'll be back after that break to talk about the design of pictures. All right, welcome to the plug chest. I'm going to call it the plug chest for now.
The plug Although it's phase. Weird.
It sounds like I've got a hole in my chest and I'm plugging it up.
The plug Anyways, phase.
Welcome to the plug phase. Welcome to the plug phase. It's a small phase that happens before the combat phase.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So here in the plug phase, we just want to remind you that you can follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. You can hit us up there with suggestions for games you'd like to hear our thoughts on, or just comments in general. You can get updates on our episodes there. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, where we have all of our episodes posted and cataloged. You can use our cool search function to find episodes where we talk about specific games that you're interested in hearing our thoughts on. If you don't see what you're looking for there, there's also a contact form you can use in our About page. You can drop suggestions for games there. If you also have any interest in having us review one of your games, then feel free to contact us through that form. Also on our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store. It's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast, where we have all of our cool, cool merch posted with our logos and stuff. They look really cool. Feel free to pick up some stuff there. That pretty much does it for Board Game Bros plugs, so let's hear it for Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. Normally I stream Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. But recently I have been taking Wednesdays off to work on some other projects. But I stream a lot of competitive games, a lot of roguelites. Mainly recently it's been Teamfight Tactics, because I'm trying to get out of gold before the end of the season. So check that out if you're interested in those types of things. You can also follow me on Twitter at MattCraigGaming, where I tweet out when I go live, as well as tweet out various things I'm working on, whether it's podcasts, videos, streams, music, what have you. And you can follow my other podcast, NetSurferPro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web, where me and my co-host Galen talk about interesting media from the past 25 or so years. We've talked about movies, board games, or not board games, that's what we do here. We've done movies, TV shows, video games, a lot of like internet phenomena, and we will have new episodes soon, maybe this week.
Is that going to change, like, if you ever review something from the 80s, or are the 80s just banned?
I'm actually trying to think. I think the oldest thing we've covered was from the 90s.
Okay.
It's hard to say, but in general, we try to aim for 21st century. And that is NetSurfer Pro on all your podcasting apps, and at NetSurfer Pro on Twitter.
And if you want some suggestions on some cool things to check out, by the way, I highly recommend listening to the NetSurfies, the final episode from 2021, where you guys went over some of your favorite things that you consumed content-wise over the last year. And I've checked out a number of those things, and they did not disappoint.
Yeah, movies of the year, albums of the year, and of course the prestigious NetSurfy Game of the Year Award.
Well, I want to give a shout out to Best Longest.
Oh yeah,
that's definitely my bag.
That was all a right. good category.
You can also follow me on Twitter at Jeff Craig Designs, and I used to stream. Maybe I'll stream sometime in the future. I don't know. I'll let you know. I'll drop my Twitch handle here. If I ever get back to that. All right, so that does it for plugs. Let's get back to the episode where we will talk about the design of pictures. Wow, what a plug section.
Yeah, that was riveting. Great. We are, of course, now moving to the combat phase.
Yes, this is the combat phase, a.k.a. the design. Well, it's not really criticism in this case. It's just... maybe a little bit of criticism.
I mean, it's critical, discussion. But it's not really negative criticism. There's positive criticism.
Yeah, that's true. Although I do have one little thing. Anyways, sure. let's get into it. I'll give you the floor. Where do you want to open?
So I feel like the biggest thing is just the different like components in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I love the selection of components for a lot of reasons. One reason being that there's only one component that is like I guess there's two components that are traditional board game things, if you count cubes as a board game thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's cards, and that's sort of the main pre-existing component type. Especially because the cards are the only one with actual pictures on them. Mm-hmm. I think this game is very refreshing because it uses some new things like shoelaces and sticks and stones.
Sure.
And, like, not only are those sort of new components in board games in general, they're very traditional, and it feels like one of those discovered games.
They're new to board games, but they've existed for forever. I wonder if the person who created this game, or people who created this game, played something much like it when they were younger or something, and this is just them, like, taking it to the packaged... sellable version.
Yeah, there's a very childlike innocence in like playing with shoelaces and building blocks and stuff that this game represents.
Yeah, the building blocks in particular, I think, are probably the most, well, no, I wouldn't say the most brilliant component, but they're definitely the component that I feel like really encapsulates what the game is about. I think like anyone could play this game without reading the rule book just after seeing the building blocks. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like you're like, oh, you see a deck of cards that has a bunch of pictures on it, and you see the building blocks, and you say, oh, I get exactly what this game is about now.
Yeah, it's very like straightforward in that regard. It kind of does almost exactly what you think it would,
mm-hmm.
in that it's just about recreating pictures with different components. But what I love is that each component has its own like strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
There's only one component that takes color into account, which is really clever. I mean, like, it's kind of not super colorblind friendly because of that, but at the same time, only one out of five components does matter for that anyways, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. if you're colorblind, you only have to sort of worry about one round out of the five. The shoelaces have, like, no difference in color, same with the blocks, the cards, but, like... the shoelaces are also better at sort of curvy, wavy forms. Mm-hmm. You know, the blocks are better for structure. It's each one They're has its own distinct
primitive shapes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sticks and stones are better for things that have lines mm-hmm. or things that have like small circular patterns. They're the best one for patterns in general, because I think the strings are two different sizes and they're hard to manipulate for fine detail. The blocks are all different sizes. So, and you don't have enough cubes to make a big like pattern thing. So yeah. And all the cards are different. So
yeah.
The sticks and stones definitely are the best at depicting a pattern.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's to say that all of the objects have their strengths and weaknesses. The cubes in particular, I think, are my favorite component in the game. Super refreshing and interesting. I think if the game didn't have the cubes, I would have been a little bit less interested, but maybe that's just me and like how I like to think about things and break down images. But the cubes sold me so hard on trying this game out. I like when I that was one thing about this game is like when I saw the cube component and how you use it to depict an image, I was like, I want to do that. Like I want to buy this game just so that I can actually do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think like a lot of the components are fun to mess with when you first see them. Like mm-hmm. I kind of almost didn't know which one I wanted to try first.
Yeah, and I definitely wanted to try the cubes eventually. I think I started with the shoelaces on my first try just because I think I just gave everyone the option to pick what they wanted to start with. But I would have started with the colored cubes. But after that, yeah, it was hard to decide like which one was I most looking forward to messing around with.
Yeah, that's why it's really nice that you rotate every turn. Mm-hmm. Everybody plays simultaneously, so you're all kind of, you know, doing something. Whereas a lot of like limited communication games, you're kind of waiting for somebody to come up with an idea on how to convey, like Mysterium, Concept. You know, those are games that we've talked about they all have sort of a waiting period where the clue giver has to interpret what they're given to then, you know, give to the other players. This game does it simultaneously, which is really nice for the sort of pacing, but also like the fact that you rotate means that there is a lot of variety in one game.
Yeah. I grapple with the patience of waiting for my turn to do the thing with a lot of these games. Like, oh, I want to be the clue giver. Like when I'm Werewords, oh, I want to be the mayor so bad. I can't wait till it's my turn to be the mayor. I propose that maybe I just be the mayor next game.
Yeah, I think every game of Werewords we've done, we've rigged it at some point.
Yeah, we've rigged it because we're just like, oh, I just want to be the mayor. Like, I just want to give out the tokens. And yeah, in Mysterium, it's like, hey, who wants to be the ghost? Maybe me? Maybe I could do it this game? So it is nice in this game that it scratches that itch of, like, you want to think creatively about things, about images and their interpretations, and you don't have to wait for your turn. You do have to wait your turn to get, you know, whatever object set you want, and you do have to pay the tax that is playing with the cards, which are my least favorite set of objects. But yeah, there's much more uptime in this game, which I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm. I also think that the sort of, I mean, for one thing, the simultaneous action is really funny because, like, you can be working on your own thing and then see that somebody else has, like, a really obvious solution to their picture. Right. And then there's sort of this funny element of, like, oh, wow, like, they had a really good one. I have to work harder. Or, like, oh, I got it easy. I can take time to look at everybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of these limited communication games are sort of built on the conversation of, like, how do you communicate and then how do you improve your communication skill with these objects? Which is sort of the discussion phase, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's what I was going for. Here's how I could have done it differently, maybe. I'm not sure if every group does this, but this is something that we do a lot with these, is sort of building off of what we've already done. And I think pictures is really cool because everybody gets every object, you get a lot of different perspectives on it. You know, like, if people are all, like, if everybody before you has done cubes to represent the entire picture, and you do a cube to represent, like, one object in the image, then that's sort of like a new sort of perspective or a new solution to using the pixel cubes that you were able to bring up because you got a chance at them, versus like in something like Mysterium or Codenames, it's going to take a while for you to implement your own perspective. And even by then, the sort of meta might have already shifted beyond that.
Yeah. I wanted to draw a connection to Wavelength, which is a game we reviewed recently, which we also had a lot of like discussion during and after the game was over about like what we would do with different cards and what clues would we give or where would we have thought the dial should be with that given clue. So it's a game that that kind of wanted to continue to be played even after you were done playing with it, or even after you were done with a round, you wanted to keep playing that round. And so you just talked about it. And I feel like this game does that as well. But one thing that this game does that Wavelength didn't do as much is like you see all of these images, you know, maybe you just see those 16 images and you see the five sets of objects. And before you start drawing coordinates and figuring out which object you're attempting to depict with your given objects, or which picture you're trying to depict with all your given objects, you're starting to like say like, ooh, if I had that object and that picture, this is what I'd do. And like I did this every time we played, I'd be like, oh man, if I had the strings and I had that picture, I know exactly how I'd depict it. And it was kind of like I was already playing the game without even having like started the first turn of the game. Maybe that's just me, but I really enjoyed that about this game. And that's something like in Wavelength, you don't see all the cards, you know, they're all stashed away in the box, so you don't really know what the different sides could be. And then once you do know, then you can start thinking like, oh, what would I put on this side? What would I put on that side? But, you know, you don't really even get to see the dial until after you've guessed. So you can't do much of that pre-game. This game has a ton of that, which I think is cool. It's like a game that kind of like begs to be played, and you can just kind of play it as a little thought experiment while you're waiting or whatever, while it's being set up. Gets you really excited to play, in my case. Mm-hmm. And I think that's super cool.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that just stems from just how simple it is and the way that it makes you think, and I don't know, makes my brain feel good.
Yeah, I feel like this is a game where it kind of invites you to cheese the picture by like I said, coming up with a really simple way to represent something in an obvious method. Like when we had the padlock, I think you had put the arch block on top of the rectangle block, and it was obviously the padlock. It was the only thing with that shape. And I feel like the way this game makes it hard to represent pictures means that it encourages you to come up with those easy solutions, which then means that, like, you kind of think about those beforehand. Like you said, if I get this picture with this object, I know what to do, because, like, it's something that seems like it should be a perfect representation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that makes sense. I do want to say I really like the box art. It represents the word pictures with each of the components, except I guess the cards. Mm-hmm. But what's really cool is that in other languages, they have a different title with the components representing other letters.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize this. Looking on BoardGameGeek, the thumbnail has the English box art, but the background has presumably the original language, where it's spelled like Bratsky, something like that. So it has like a Z, a K, and a Y. Even the R is actually made of different components than the English version, which is funny. But yeah, like that's a really cool graphic design touch. Oh, Bratsky.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a really cool graphic design touch.
Yeah, that's a nice little detail that they figured out how to depict it in it, whatever language they published it in.
That also helps sort of sell the idea of the game just by looking at the box. Like, you're representing different things with different components, and each of them has their own sort of gimmicks and tricks.
True. Yeah, that's very clever.
Even the English cover, the E is made out of sticks going in lines, so it even does that little parallel repeating lines thing you mentioned. So that's funny.
Yeah. Let's see. So I have one little teeny weeny gripe with the game. And that's just that it's hard capped at five players. Well, I mean, if you care about the point scoring, it's hard capped at five players, because you have these five sets. I guess you could split them up of objects, but even then, the score sheet is limited to five
sure.
columns, five rows. And so, yeah, you can't, using their score sheet, you can't play more than five rounds. Or if you played more than five rounds, you'd have nowhere to put them. You know, I guess you could divide the things up. Anyways, but if you played with more than five players, without splitting up any set of objects into, like, separating the shoestring, so one person will have a short one and one person will have a long one. So without doing that, there's going to be people that will take turns just not doing anything, only guessing. So yeah, there's no rules in the game, by the way, to explain how you would play with more than five people. It's just capped at five players. You can play with less, in which case you still play five rounds. There's just rounds where one of the objects isn't being used. So that's a little bit of a gripe that I have, that it's unfortunate that it stops at five, because I feel like this games like this are really good to play with even larger groups than five. But what I will say is that the game doesn't ask for this, but we've talked, you know, about, like, well, how do we try to include more people? And you would definitely not be able to use the standard score sheet that comes with the game. You'd have to make your own. But one thing you could do to include more people into the game is to include more sets of objects of your own device to the game. So I think this is actually something that's kind of really cool about the game, that, like, I've thought about it longer, and, like, that's kind of the best solution I have, and I think it's a pretty good one. Like, you just add a new set of objects to the game, and now the sixth player will use that one, and it gets passed around. You play for six rounds now, and everything else just kind of scales the same way that it would. But, like, thinking of, like, what that sixth set of objects could be is a really interesting and fun experiment, and something that you could really play with. There's plenty of room in the box. You know, it doesn't, like, get really super packed together when you pack it all up, so there's definitely room for you to throw something of your own choosing in there. You know, you could put, like, a small bag of Legos in there, of, like, a limited color palette, plenty of other household objects.
Paper clips. What'd you say? Pipe cleaners, paper clips.
Yeah, you could even just straight up have, like, a dry erase board and marker.
Some dice.
Dice, yeah. So yeah, there's I mean, and I think the variety of objects that come with the game are great for inspiring this decision that you would make. And also, it would not look out of place no matter what you threw in there, because the variety is already pretty wide, and the objects that they have in there get pretty primitive and rudimentary. So, you know, anything you throw in there would not look out of place.
Yeah.
Like, unless it was, like, maybe super duper high tech.
Now that we talk about this, I'm definitely interested in trying out some other sort of self-made expansions, if you will.
Sure. Like maybe a calculator could be fun. Hmm. Like, how do you depict an image on it just only using a standard, you know, 9-digit plus minus times divide equals calculator?
Well, I think you need to answer that before you put it in the box. But sure. I will say, I don't think it's the worst thing to just rotate everything clockwise and have some people sit out. It's not a clean solution, but it does mean that you can have more players. Ideally, that means that everybody would have the same amount of turns, like, taking turns as they would guess, without, like, making something, which means the amount of times that you can get points from people guessing you would be the same for everybody. It just means that there is a little more downtime for some players, which kind of changes the pacing of the game.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that it goes from being a game with no downtime to a game with at least one round's worth of downtime.
Yeah, but I will say,
yeah, that is a temporary solution.
I don't know if this is really a complaint, but there are a lot of landscapes. And,
you know, it's funny, like, because we played a couple games, and some of those games we pretty much only had landscapes and seascapes. But there was that one game we played where there was, like, a ton of still lifes. Like, over half of the images were, like, still lifes and, like, things of, like, objects that were less focused on landscapes and natures and skylines and stuff like that. So it has that variety. It could be that we just didn't shuffle the deck enough.
Yeah.
but yeah, you are right that in this game there are kind of a large portion of them are landscapes, and those landscapes have a lot in common with one another.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why the cards feel so bad for us is because not a lot of them actually have to deal with things in landscapes. There's some that are water related. There's like the clover for plants. But beyond that, there's not a lot of options. Yeah, you have to get really creative. Like really creative.
You have to get real creative and think real abstractly with the cards.
Whereas like if you have a picture with a car, you can place the car.
Uh-huh. You know. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree that but there's a ton of pictures in the game pictures. So even though there's a lot of landscapes, there's a lot of different landscapes, which is to say that the game is replayable a lot. And I think I'm excited to play this game more and more just because I want to keep trying out all of the different objects and making other different depictions with them. Like every game is a new opportunity to use that object in a new way. And that is something that's exciting to me.
Yeah, this game kind of leads to eureka moments, if that makes sense. Like the feeling of either suddenly understanding what somebody meant or like suddenly realizing the perfect way to represent something. That sort of feeling is beautiful and something I kind of don't often think about in board games.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like if that sort of thing happened in other similar games. Like I can maybe remember a handful of times in Codenames when like you come up with the perfect clue for something, but it doesn't happen super often. You know, sometimes it's the like maybe the time constraints or just the fact that you don't get to be the clue giver for very long. Maybe it's just like because you're sitting there with these objects so much that you get more time to really explore them and understand them on a deeper level. In this game, that's why the eureka moments came to us. Hard to say, but yeah, I do enjoy those moments as well, and this game does facilitate those moments.
Mm-hmm.
I want to point out that other than like the fact that you're always playing and you're always, you know, you always have that opportunity to give your clue so that there's not as much of that time where you're just waiting to be it in this game. Other than that, I feel like this game has other elements that make it feel like less annoying and less feels bad than other limited communication games. And like I want to call out Concept, which has very similar looking box art, very similar sized game, very similar game to this in general. It's like if you took just one of the sets of objects and pictures and made a whole game out of it. But I feel like we get to a lot of frustrated points when we play Concept, especially as the clue giver, because you feel like you're giving the best clue you can and like no one's getting it. And part of the problem in Concept is that you could be giving a clue for anything. So, you know, you don't have like a set list of 16 different guesses that you need to make in Concept. The whole universe of ideas out there that you have to pick from. To make your guess. So, but it just gets frustrating when it's taking a long time and the clues you're giving just aren't landing for the other players in the game. But in this game, it does not feel like that. Like it's just like so like easygoing. Like you just make your thing and people guess it, like whatever. If I lose, oh well. Like it doesn't feel like there's a lot of big emphasis on the points in this game or winning. I don't know. Did you get that feeling at all?
I mean, it definitely felt bad when I didn't get the match between component and picture that everybody else got. But I think it helps that, like, the rounds feel relatively quick. The fact that you don't have a lot of components to work with means that your decision space is pretty low, which usually means that it's pretty quick to just come up with a basic idea of what you want. Whereas, like, Concept is this huge grid of objects, and you can kind of start anywhere.
But I even feel like in code names, you can feel pretty annoyed when people aren't getting the clues right. Or when you're misinterpreting your clue giver's clues wrong, when you misinterpret it wrong and you're like, what were you even meaning with your clue, you know?
Yeah, I think for those, it's that the clues have a longer impact than in this game. Like in code names, that clue that you miss will stay over multiple rounds and kind of loom over you. And in Concept, you're just given a lot of time to guess the idea, and like a certain cube might be on the board for a really long time. But like in this game, it's just one round per clue. And so if your like shoelace art doesn't land, then that's fine because you don't have to think about it anymore. You don't have to dwell on that anymore. Whereas in those other games, if you go down the wrong like trail of thought, then you're going to be down that path for a while.
Mm-hmm. You know, it could also be that just, like, playing with blocks just, like, taps into some, like, mindset where it's like, oh, we're just, like, playing with toys and nothing really matters. Like,
yeah.
Like, I take a video game loss much heavier than I would a loss in my fictional Lego war game that I'm playing, you know? Like, oh, well, my Lego clones died to your Lego mech. Like, whatever, let's keep playing with Legos. Like, I'm now playing with blocks. It's like, oh, well, you didn't guess my block thing.
Yeah.
It's like way lower stakes, you know, for mentally than like a game of Magic the Gathering or a game of like a video game.
It's more Roller Coaster Tycoon than Sim City.
Yeah, we're just playing with blocks. Like, no stress. There's no...
Yeah.
Win or lose, who cares? We're just playing with blocks. And that's nice. That's a nice feeling sometimes.
And maybe that's the feeling we need nowadays.
Yeah, maybe. And this is where we take our big political spin on on our podcast, and this whole podcast completely changes in tone.
Yes, that is 2022 for us.
Yes.
That's our new thing.
You know, I've decided I don't want that to be our new thing.
Okay,
cool. I think I want to take a note from this game and keep talking about games, just sort of like we were playing with blocks.
Started to get into a little relaxing sort of voice there.
Yes.
Very Bob Rossian.
So go get yourself some blocks. I've been watching a lot of Joshua Wiseman videos. He does cooking videos. Talks in a very similar way.
Well, there's your Board Game Bros recommendation, I guess.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, shout outs. Okay. I think that's about all I have to say about Pictures. Very simple game, very fun to play. Look forward to continue playing it in the future.
It deserves the spiel win.
Yeah, it definitely deserves it. So thank you for listening to our episode on Pictures, and we will see you next time when we discuss another thing.
See ya.